Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross Controls. Great to be with you once again. Coming up in the second half of our show today, we're going to learn about simple strategies to increase efficiency and make an impact every day.
You're looking at me.
I'm all for that. We're going to hear about the Daily Edge with David Horsager, but it turns out that our guest for the first half hour had to cancel at the last minute, and so we're going to run an interview I did some time ago with Dr. Henry Cloud about bad habits, which I'm not looking at you now.
Yeah, good.
Talking about that.
But, thank you.
So we're going to talk about never go back, 10 things you'd never do again with Dr. Henry Cloud, and then stay tuned for a conversation with David Horsager in the second half hour. It's an honor today to spend some time with Dr. Henry Cloud. You certainly know of him. He's a leadership consultant, a best-selling author, speaker. He's sold over his books have sold over 7 million copies, both a psychologist and a student of the spiritual life, and has written over 20 books, several that have really impacted me, and I recommend it to you. 9 Things You Simply Must Do, Integrity, Necessary Endings, and The One Life Solution. I want to talk about one that he's just released. It's called Never Go Back, 10 Things You'll Never Do Again. This book is about, well, it's essentially it's addressing something that we're all too familiar with most of the time. It's about making mistakes, and sometimes big ones, sometimes small ones, and you're sharing some doorways to success for never going back. In fact, I know you wanted to use the term repent as as maybe a title for the book. But talk about what the book is all about.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've got a fun job. I get to watch really high performers in all areas of life and work with them. And what I noticed was people that do really well, you know, in their careers or professions, in business, and in the areas of relationships, they, in some ways, they're really not that different, you know, as people from other people that, you know, kind of stay stuck and can't make it work. But there is one huge difference, and that is they actually notice that they really don't have problems. They have patterns. And it's their patterns that are really creating the problems. And once they get that and they wake up, they go through these awakenings. They go through, it's like mental puberty. They go through a doorway never to return to the way they old way they used to do it. And then they have a whole new course, you know, in that direction. And so I just got really fascinated by these awakenings or wake up calls or doorways or changes people would make that they never go back.
But I know that just setting up the topic that this isn't necessarily talking about second chances or that it's different than I guess just a second chance at doing the same old thing.
Right, it is. And back to your you know, the question about the repent word. You know, if you keep walking into a wall, finally, it's probably a good idea to say, you know, maybe I should turn around and go in a different direction. And that's really what the word repent means. It means, you know, change your mind, turn your direction, go a different route.
Well, let's flesh the word out in a number of the ways you talk about some of those places where we never want to go back. And I know one of the early ones you talk about is that we have to understand sort of who we are. We can't be who we're not created to be.
Yeah, one of the 10 things is, you know, successful people realize that they'll never go back to trying to be something or somebody that they're not. And what I mean by that is a lot of times, you know, you're going along in life and you want a relationship to work with somebody, or you want a certain job to work, or you want something, you know, a position to work, in a career or this, that, and the other. And you really want kind of the big thing. You want the result. But when you look at the actuality of what it's going to mean day to day that you have to be like, it would really require you to be somebody else, somebody you're not. I mean, I found that when I was, I was an accounting and finance major because I was good in math, and I thought I was going to, my dream was to be in professional golf, and I had a hand injury in college and had to quit, and here I am, an accounting and finance major, which I, was good at, but I went to work in a bank, halfway through college, and I barely made it through the summer. I mean, it just was not who I was, and I ended up, changing my major. Now, that doesn't mean that for seasons, there are times we got to buckle down and be somebody we're not to accomplish a goal. But if you're looking at something that's gonna be long-term, a job or a relationship or living in a town or whatever it is, and it's just not you. God has made everybody with certain talents and gifts and bents and designs. And you just better, I've heard people say it 1,000 times, yeah, I learned that's just not me, and I never try to do that again. And that's when things change.
Yeah. Is, there's this secondary part to that is that we do things sometimes to please other people, right? That's
right.
That's what we sort of get caught in that trap.
We do. And, in fact, I was doing a radio interview earlier today, and the host was looking at the list of 10, and he said, gosh, I've got this one. I have to confess I'm a people pleaser. And I said, well, before you go calling that a sin, let's just try to understand this thing. Do you know that God, that's a good thing. God has wired us all the way to the neurology of how we're glued together. He has wired us to really come alive and thrive and do better when we are around people that are pleased with us, that love us, that are approving of us and are for us. If you look at a little baby, for example, and they can hook their brains up, and if mom or dad or somebody smiles at an infant, the infant's whole being changes. They start having serotonin releases and all this dopamine and all this stuff in their brain. They smile and they start wiggling and everything kind of comes alive. And then you frown at them, and the exact same thing happens. They begin to shut down. So having people approve, good and faithful servant, well done, that's a good thing. Here's the problem. The problem is we don't discriminate between who we want to please and who we don't. And if you have the dynamic of thinking that you can please everybody, make everybody happy, then that's a nightmare, because the reality is the world has a lot of different kinds of people in it. And so if you're pleasing really good, honest, responsible, faithful, loving people, that means you're doing some good stuff in life, because they're not going to be pleased with, lying and cheating and stealing and all that. But if you're pleasing control freaks or narcissistic people or self-centered people, are people that want to do dark things and you'd have to give up your values to do it, if you're keeping them happy, that's not good. I did a leadership event one time with Tony Blair, and my job was to kind of pull out of him, his views on leadership, and I asked him what were some of the awakenings that he went through as prime minister. And he said, one of the biggest ones, he said, everything changed when I realized that it's just true. It's like math. It's just true that every decision divides. Every decision you make, there's some people that want you to choose A, other people want you to choose B, and decision, they're going to like it, and some people aren't going to like it. He said, once you realize that, then you can start really making decisions based on the merit, and you can start playing offense in life instead of defense. And just make sure you upset the right people.
We're not hopefully not upsetting you, but we're encouraging you with Henry Cloud's new book. Dr. Henry Cloud is a best-selling author, psychologist, and a business leadership consultant. He's sold over 7 million copies of his books, over 20 books. The new one is called Never Go Back, 10 Things You'll Never Do Again. and he's our guest today on Connecting Faith. Talk today with Dr. Henry Cloud about his book called Never Go Back, 10 Things You'll Never Do Again. We're talking about how we can maybe avoid some of the mistakes that happen to us and take us down the wrong path and find some awakenings and new doorways to success. And Henry, you mentioned a little bit earlier, we're talking about pleasing other people. And if you're pleasing the wrong kind of people, maybe they're control freaks or narcissists or self-centered. At the same time, though, as you say, we can't change someone else. That's always kind of hard to hear.
It is hard to hear because, you know, by definition, as being humans wanting to live with other good humans, then when we run into people we want to perform better, we want to change them, right? We want to fix them. And it's people's lives actually just go down a totally different path when they wake up and have the realization that you cannot change another person. Now, let's explain that. That does not mean that you can't be a change agent in somebody's life, that you can't influence them to change, that you can't order circumstances and order your relationship with them in a way that maximizes the probability and the opportunity for them to change. But it does mean that ultimately you can't violate the reality that they have a choice. And what happens is, you know, you see this with parents and kids, you see it with spouses, you see it with bosses, with somebody who's not performing, they try to light a fire under their belly and get them motivated and push them and get them to, you know, I've told them to do this and I want you, and how many times do I have to tell you, didn't I tell you to do your homework, and on and on and on and on and on. And try to get somebody sober or try to get somebody, you know, to care about school or we have a natural kind of tendency to want to do this. But the reality is you can't make anybody do anything. What you can do is you can be a change agent and relate to them in a way where you can order your relationship that makes it in a way that makes it not work in the way that they're being. Like if I'm a boss, I can't make somebody make those sales calls, but I can order my job for them in a way that if they're not making the sales calls, it's not going to work for them. I can do that. And that will highly influence them. But to just try to get somebody to be responsible or get somebody to be motivated or get somebody to be spiritual, and really where we're trying to take control and drive another person's growth, it never works.
You know, when we're talking about change, I mean, most of us are, I guess I certainly will say that, reluctant to change because generally change means, you know, pain and discomfort. And now you address that we prefer the no pain version, which doesn't really work.
Well, you know, it's an interesting paradox. Again, we're kind of in some ways set up for failure in a fallen world, because the way God has designed our brains, your brain is actually wired to resist change in a certain way. What I mean by that is you have maps of the way the world works, all right? So if you got in your car this morning and you live in the United States, you start driving to work and somebody's driving down the wrong side of the road, like if you're in England or something, then your mind is going to register that as an error, and you're going to blow the horn. You're going to say, foul, I don't want to get back on your side, you know, because we have ways that we're wired to think things work. Now, the problem is that we're wired, because of our experiences in life and in a fallen world, we learn some ways and we get wired to do relationship in certain ways and performance in certain ways and all of that that basically don't work. But we're wired that way. And so that's what you're saying. That's when what you're saying is very, very important, that we realize that, you know, I've really got a choice here. There's two options. I can continue to do this and continue to fail and go through the pain of the consequences of one more broken relationship or one more failed job or one more whatever it is, or I can go through the pain of doing the work that it's going to take to learn some new skills, and to change. But the outcome of that path is very different. There's pain involved in both. You know, pain is unavoidable. The only pain that we can avoid is the pain that comes from trying to avoid pain.
That goes along with, I think, taking in the big picture, right? Not losing the big picture, because that's the same, that's kind of part of the motivation, isn't it?
It really is. One of the things you see that great performers do is when things happen, they just don't react to a situation without looking at the big picture and asking the question, you know, what is it that I'm really trying to accomplish here? You know, when somebody does something that might infuriate us, you know, or really bugs us or something, and you'd want to respond to that, and you'd deal with it in a certain way or whatever. But when you stop for a moment and say, wait a minute, now, you know, this person's going to be my neighbor. They just bought this house. They're going to be living there for 20, 30 years. I gotta look at, you know, we got to live next to each other for a while. Maybe I want to handle this situation a little differently because I'm keeping the big picture in mind. And we really start to orient our choices and our resources and our time and our energy and our efforts very, very differently in little decisions when we keep the big picture in mind.
And that maybe ties nicely into the idea of the don't neglect to do due diligence, that, you know, a little bit of planning, that sort of ready, aim, fire goes a little better for the big picture, too.
You know what? It's actually related to it's one of the stories that I have in the beginning of the book when I had a situation one time with a company that I owned, and I hired somebody to run it based on the recommendation of a friend who knew this guy and was a friend of his. And, you know, everything sounded good. And so I hired him. And long story short, after about a year, I found out a bunch of stuff that he had been telling me was not true. And the company was just bleeding money when he told me I was making money. And we were in real trouble. And I just really screwed up. And the reason that I had screwed up was I had hired somebody without really, really, really doing my due diligence and looking into his, you know, his history and where he performed well and under what circumstances and where he hadn't, and, you know, just really, really looking at it. So I'm sitting at home the night that I found all this out, and one of my mentors calls me. Didn't know what was going on. He just called to check in. And this is a man that's 20 years older than me and seemed like everything he had touched in life succeeded. And, yeah, I really looked up to him. And that's the last person you want to hear from when you've just screwed up this badly. And so he calls. He says, so how's it going? And I said, well, honestly, not so great. He said, what's up? And I tell him the story of what I'd done. Hired the wrong person, didn't really check him out, and blah, blah, blah. Now I'm in deep trouble. And the phone goes silent, and I think he's going to, like, start yelling at me or something. But after about what seemed like an eternity, he finally says, well, we've all been there. I said, we? You know, I thought everything he did worked, right? I said, what do you mean we? And he said, well, we've all made that mistake. He said, anybody who's ever done anything has made that mistake. You got to learn that one. He said, I tell you what, once you do it, once you make that mistake, you'll never go back. And that phrase really stuck out to me. And it's interesting that in working with really high performers, you are going, and when you really start to ask them about the path of how they got to where they got to, then everybody virtually has got a story about where they didn't do their due diligence. And then they tell you, but I learned my lesson. And so what happens is you see people who don't do due diligence in romantic relationships and friendships and a bunch of stuff, and it's a nightmare, but then they don't learn that lesson. And then they jump into the next one. Like you said, ready, aim, fire. They're just all about fire, ready, aim.
In the second part of the book, we don't have time to get through all the 10 doorways to success, but you talk about the now what, and you refer to sort of the wake-up call, and there are a number of ways that we can wake up, and I guess just say a word about how we get started in turning things around.
Well, that's kind of the $64 question, right? And what the big wake-up call is when we recognize that, you know, I don't really have a problem here. I think the problem is this, you know, this controlling person that, you know, drives me crazy, or this, you know, whatever it is. What I've got is I've got a pattern in my life of being vulnerable to that kind of person, because these kind of people are everywhere, right? And if I look back, you know, I remember one time I was doing a group, and this lady said, "I get it. I've been married to 9 abusive husbands, and I don't want to do that anymore." And this other lady says, "Mabel, shut up. You haven't been married to 9 abusive husbands. You've been married to 1 abusive husband with 9 different names." And she recognized, you know, she thought all these men were the problem, and certainly they were problematic, but her problem was she was just attracted to a certain kind of person. And so the wake-up call is realizing that we all have patterns that we need to address. And once you do that, then you have to ask the question, okay, so what do? I just make a New Year's resolution and I'm not going to do that anymore? No, that doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is that these patterns are hardwired into us, and they're just part of our makeup. And you can't just make a choice. You know, Moses tried that. He came off the hill with 10 choices for people, right? And what the Bible tells us is that that's powerless to change anybody. So we can't just say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. We must say, I don't want to do that anymore, and then ask the second question of, so what's it going to take for me to ever do that again? And that's when we get to the real revelation that the Bible and all of science affirms. There's no such thing as self-help. You know, you can't say to a car, it's out of gas, well, you know, go get some self-gas. It can't. And when we realize that God is the only self-sustaining entity and the rest of us draw everything we need from outside of ourselves, then you bend the knee and you bow to the reality of what I like to call open system change. If you're a closed system trying to just change yourself, it's not going to work. But if you open up to two things, a new energy sources, or, you know, a lot of new energy sources, and new intelligence, so we need fuel, we need energy, and we need intelligence to order that energy, which means you open up to God, you open up to other people, you get support, you get mentoring, you get some coaching, you get some help, then we can change pretty much anything. But it's hard for us to do that second step and then to know, you know, what kind of intelligence and what kind of people we need around us.
Don't do it on your own. Don't buy into the self-help idea, and find some doorways to success in Henry Cloud's new book, Never Go Back, 10 Things You'll Never Do Again. Dr. Henry Cloud, psychologist and a leadership consultant, best-selling author, and the book is just out from Howard Books, called Never Go Back. Looking forward to more good insight down the road.
No, likewise. It's fun to be with you. I appreciate it.
Well, coming up in the next half hour, we'll talk to David Horsager about The Daily Edge, simple strategies to increase efficiency and make an impact every day. Wise counsel from gifted business leaders and writers. David Horsager coming up in a Glad to spend some time now with a friend who we've had on before, and we want to welcome back David Horsager to Connecting Faith. David is a business strategist, a speaker, an author, and the time that we talked last time was about his national bestseller, The Trust Edge, How Top Leaders Gain Faster Results, Deeper Relationships, and a Stronger Bottom Line. Just released a new book called The Daily Edge, Simple Strategies to Increase Efficiency and Make an Impact Every Day. And so we're going to have a very practical conversation here for the next half hour. But I wanted to welcome back David to Connecting Faith. David, good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Neil. Great to talk to you.
You didn't really set out to become sort of an efficiency expert, and that's really not what The Daily Edge is about so much. But give us a little background. How did this come about?
Well, there was a few things. Number one, you're right. Everything we do, out of Horse Tiger Leadership, all our consulting, speaking, training, everything I, you know, largely think about, comes under the trust edge, comes under trust. We're continuing trust research. We still believe a lack of trust is the biggest expense you have in your life. The greatest leaders, organizations, pastors, friends, governments are marked by one thing, and that's trust. And we still believe there's a way to build it that came out of that original research, the eight-pillar framework. We still believe you build trust, or you become most trust or gain the trust edge by being clear, consistent, committed, all those things we talked about before. But the daily edge, it is a little unique. First of all, it's half the size of the trust edge, it's or less. It's really a tip-based strategy book. You can take the tip and use it tomorrow. 1 to 4 page quick ideas. They do fall under several of the pillars, like the consistency pillar, the clarity pillar, the contribution pillar from the trust edge. And there were three kind of things that came together that moved me to write the book. Number one, people were asking me, my audience was saying, how do you do that thing? How do you apply that? And so I share the 90-day quick plan, the strategy I used to lose 50 pounds in 5.5 months. I share the DMA strategy, difference-making actions, exactly how you can never have a day where you go to bed saying, I worked really hard, but I didn't get anything done. We share a strategy that people, you know, ask me that many have attributed to tripling their sales in 3 months. We share the seed strategy, but, you know, we'll get into a few of those. But basically, there's simple, actionable, 35 bullet point strategies of exactly how I did things that changed my life or the lives of those we serve. So they do come under trust, but they're really actionable. But let me say a couple things from the productivity side. Number one, you know, I would read productivity books, and there was two major problems that I saw. One was, it was so long, 300-page productivity book, and you get to page 100, and you still won't have a tip on productivity, and you want an idea to use, right?
Yeah.
The other problem was it showed how to be productive, but at the expense of relationships and people, and that's our business. That's our life. So trust is the thing. Now, I don't agree with people, even in ministry, to think it's only about people, and I don't have to get anything done, so let's go have coffee, and let's avoid doing meaningful work. Coffee, relational pieces can be the meaningful work, but some people avoid doing other important things and don't serve people well because they only think they can, you know, sit and not do something that actually they need to do. And so on the one side, these tips are really created because they help change me and really others we serve in being productive, but not at the expense of relationships. So not mowing over people, not I only have a 5-minute meeting, I'm going to mash everybody down, but productivity and efficiency tips so that I can serve others well, so that I can serve people, the mission, and those I'm called to serve better.
I know that your faith plays an important part in your work, and we'll kind of come around to give you a chance to talk a little bit more about that and how that, you know, provides one of the frameworks, the pillars of the trust edge, but we want to jump into the daily edge a little bit because right off the top you talk about a 90-day quick plan, and there's something to be said for planning out. I mean, this is a lot of what you offer are things that you can do today and every day, but there is something about planning, looking ahead a bit too. Talk about that 90-day plan.
Well, I think there's a couple big problems with, you know, people trying to change two time frames that are not as great. One is a whole year. People, you ever set a New Year's resolution? Like, you know, Journal of Psychology says only 2% of the people maybe actually accomplish it. So a year is so far out there. People say, oh, I it's February, I still can get to that. Oh, it's June, I still get to that. That's a problem. They never get to it. The other problem is they set so many. I'm gonna learn 5 languages, and I'm gonna lose 30 pounds, and I'm gonna clean the garage. Pick one. That's way too many, because for real change, you got to be focused. We agree with Collins, who says if you have more than 3 priorities, you don't have any. So getting clear. The other problem that Americans have been served up is this notion that you can change a habit in 21 days. And it actually, the research was okay in the 1950s, came out in the book Psycho-Cybernetics, 1960, but it really doesn't say that. And some kind of probably cheesy motivational speakers took this idea, and it spread like wildfire across North America, and it's not true. It's not even true to the original research unless it's something that's highly addictive. 21 days is not long enough for most chains. What we find is 90 is very much a sweet spot for real change to happen. And I can tell you, for me, in 90 days, a mentor pushed me to not complain one time for 90 days. I want to complain about the idea, but the bottom line is I didn't, and it didn't just change my life, it changed the trajectory of my life. In 90 days, I didn't just lose 33 pounds. I changed the way I look at food and life. So first of all, we believe in 90-day increments are the best for real personal change. Secondly, there's a six-question process in the book for exactly how you can get clear enough to really change things in 90 days. I will give you right now the last three questions. The other three are important. These three are critical. And this is the question of clarity. The fourth question in the 90-day quick plan is, how am I going to get there? About anything. How am I going to do it? The fifth question is, how am I going to get there? The sixth question is, how am I going to get there? We need to learn to ask the question how at least three times in order to get clear enough to do something differently. How leads to clarity and leads to specificity. And I agree that the why is inspiring and unifying. I agree that you need to know what you're going to do. You need to know some of those other things and learn those other questions that I even talk about and how to ask them and why they're so important. But what we see a great deficiency on is people getting clear enough. I'll give you two quick examples. I'm working with a big healthcare organization. They're losing HCAP funding. They're losing patients. They need to do something differently. Get through a half day of a full day of PrestEdge training. Top table, big names, big letters behind their names, CEO and, you know, the VP and ADD. I mean, they got all the letters, right? Anyway, the table, after half day, I said, what do you need to do? You know, we got through the process. What do you need to do to build trust? And the table leader stood up and said, we need to be more clear. And we went through the whole process, and I said, how are you going to do that? And he stood up in front of everyone with his final answer and said, we're going to communicate more. And I said, how? He sat down. They talked about it, talked about it, talked about it. When he was ready, he stood up and said, we're going to hold each other accountable. I said, how? Because you know that what that means, Neil, and I know what that means. I'm not going to do anything, then I'll blame everybody else.
Sure.
I said, how? And we see this all the time. How? Once I got to the third or fourth how, they finally started to get it, and they got to something. You ask how. By the way, you can ask how. I don't care if I'm working with Walmart, Procter & Gamble, the biggest companies in the world, or small ones. Every table group I've ever worked with, every individual I've ever worked with, can ask how until they can get to something they can do starting today or tomorrow to solve any business or leadership challenge. It's just you might have to ask how seven times. How you do that? How you do that? How you do that? We hear it all the time. I want our company to have a better culture. How you going to do that? We're going to appreciate people more. How you going to do that? We're going to start to say nice things. How you going to do that? We're going to write notes. How you do that? Oh, until someone gets to, I'm going to write a note every day for the next 90 days. I don't trust them because they're not clear enough. One more example. So the bottom line on that is you got to ask how until you're going to do something differently starting today or tomorrow, and you can do it. Most people in most meetings and with themselves, they let themselves off the hook, and they don't ask how. And I know we're spending a lot of time on this one, but I'd like to give something people can actually use. So I'll give one more example personally. How did people ask me, how did I lose the 50 pounds in 5.5 months? Now, there's more to it, but let me give you the main strategy. First of all, I got to say this. I'm not a healthcare expert. This is the strategy that worked for me. And it was really a clarity strategy. Because what do most people across America say when I would ask them, how do you lose weight? How do you stay healthy? What would they say to you? Eat less, exercise
more. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All over. Eat less, exercise more. Neil, that wasn't clear enough for me. So I started to ask people that have to fly on planes like I do, go to banquets like I do. I started to ask people that look fit, not try to be too creepy, but I'd ask anybody that looked kind of healthy, how do you stay so fit on the road? How do you stay healthy? I got over 100 ideas. And what I learned from most of them is I wasn't going to do them. I wasn't going to – either it wasn't clear enough or I wasn't going to eat that horse pill or that idea that that person had. But 15 of those ideas, I asked how until I could do something differently starting today or tomorrow – to eat less, exercise more. What really specific. So to give an example of one idea, and this is really just to help people get how clear you need to be, not, you know, anything else. One doctor said this to me, 80-year-old fit doctor said, David, most men in America, if they just wouldn't drink their calories, they'd lose 30 to 50 pounds in a year. I was blown away. I knew that wouldn't be true for me, but it must because I don't drink a lot of alcohol, don't drink a lot of pop, but I started to think about it. On the plane, even though I don't drink pop at home, I'd often say I'll have a Coke, like 180 calories in a Coca-Cola. I said, made one shift to Fresca. I grew up without much money on the farm up in northern Minnesota. We didn't have money. We didn't get to have pop ever. So I go back to childhood. When someone offers me my own can of pop, I don't have to share with my six, you know, with all eight of us. I mean, I guess, so I just make one quick change. I'll go, I'll have Fresca. No calories in a Fresca. Might be bad for you. Might have aspartame in it. I had to make one change at a time. I grew up thinking, yeah, orange juice was good for you. It's got vitamin C in it.
Sure.
I learned, eat a half an orange, drink some water. Way better for you. And it's full of sugar. So all I'm saying is, I asked how until I could look at it. I can look at anything I drink and say, oh, there's calories in it. Not going to drink it. For 6 months, I did not drink a calorie, and that was one of the steps that was so specific, and I got so clear I could do something about it today or tomorrow, and that changed me. So the point is, if you're going to change anything, I see it all over the world. People let themselves off the hook because they're not clear about how they're going to do it, so they're not motivated to do it. They don't know the next step. How, until you're going to do something differently today or tomorrow. That is one of the keys to the 90-day quick plan.
Great insight and some practical takeaway there. We want to be getting clear, talking clarity, consistency. It's all part of the daily edge, simple strategies to increase efficiency and make an impact every day. It's a new book from David Horsager. David's a business strategist, a speaker, and author. He's written the bestseller, The Trust Edge. The subtitle is How Top Leaders Gain Faster Results, Deeper Relationships, and a Stronger Bottom Line. By the way, you can find out more about the Trust Edge and some great free resources at their website, trustedge.com. And in a moment, we're going to talk more about some of these great tips in this new little book called The Daily Edge with David Horsager. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Stay tuned. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected with David Horsager today. David is a business strategist, a speaker, an author. He's written the national bestseller, The Trust Edge, and the new release just out called The Daily Edge. It includes the simple strategies to increase efficiency and make an impact every day. We all want to do that, and we want to be clear in what we're doing. We want to be building relationships, investing in things that matter most. One of the things, David, we talked about the 90-day quick plan and spent a little more time on that, about digging deeper, asking the how questions till you get something actionable. But you also have something you call the DMAs, different making actions. Say a word about those.
Difference making actions. You know, it just happens that a lot of people go through a day and they say, oh, I worked really hard, but I didn't get anything done. And I wanted to stop hearing that, especially from myself. So little quick strategy. It actually, the idea dates back to the 1920s, an idea that Ivy Lee, one of the first management consultants, gave the first person, Charles Schwab, the first Charles Schwab, CEO of Bethlehem Steel at the time, an idea that, that basically this idea, I've reframed it a little bit, made it relevant for today, but Ivy Lee gave this idea, and Charles said, what do I owe you for this idea? This has changed my life. It's made me more efficient. And Ivy Lee said, well, just use it for a couple more months and pay me whatever you think it's worth. And Charles Schwab gave Ivy Lee a check for what in today's money would be $250,000, over a quarter million. Little idea. It's simple. All it is a lot of people look at their to-do list. There's hundreds of items on their to-do list. Where they look at the to-do list and they get overwhelmed. So overwhelmed, some people don't do anything. We can't have that. So you might have your to-do list on an online platform. That's fine. But we take out, everybody we work with, our team, take out a post-it note. Non-technical for a reason. We don't want it beeping. We don't want it changing. Take out a post-it note. Put the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on it. Every morning, before we get shot at by email or anything else, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we think, what are the top 5 things I could do today to move my organization forward? And most of those things are quick. They're a phone call. People put off a key phone call, and the next day it's not as warm. They're a thank you note. They're a quick, awesome thing. They might take a little time, might not, but five most important things I could do today to move the organization forward. We put those five things down. We make sure they're fun, F-U-N. First things first, under your main priority, and number attached, F, first, first. U, under main priority. N, number attached. The key is a number attached, and I will say this, and people still won't get it until we practice a little while. What I mean by that is you can't say, I'm going to make more calls. You can say, I'm going to make five calls. Then at the end of the day, you know if you did it or didn't do it. You can't say, I'm going to go clean my desk. You can say, I'm going to clean two drawers, or I'm going to, you know, clean for 20 minutes. But you make those five DMAs. Then at the end of the day, usually we get these done by 11 in the morning, but we know after that we've done five things, key things that have helped us move the mission of our organization forward, even if they're little, even if they're quick. We've done the things many people spend all day avoiding, the most important thing they ought to do today to move the organization forward. So this helps us not do that.
That leads into one that you know practice in your organization as well, and you recommend the Power Hour, and it sort of ties in with the email and some of those things. So say a word about being at your best when you're at your best.
Well, I'll tell you the thing about a Power Hour. First of all, the problem that's just really hurting workers and, frankly, stay-at-home moms and everybody today is interruptions. People are so much less efficient. It's great to be able to communicate quickly, but we never get anything done. You finally get to a project and ding, something comes up. Oh, there's an email. You turn around and check your email. And then, oh, you go back to the work. Oh, where was I? Oh, it's lunchtime. I guess I'll leave. And they never get anything done. So the Power Hour, what we do in our company is say, hey, 1 hour a day, and you might say 90 minutes, you might say 2 hours, but if you can just do, for instance, a Power Hour from 9 to 10, let's say, where no one can interrupt, no one is expected to check email, no one has to take a phone call. In our case, my assistant does take calls over that hour, but, there's no interruption. That hour is a quiet hour. Focus on your most important thing done. Maybe it's those key DMAs or something else where you know you're not going to have interruption. It's unbelievable what you get done in that hour, or what I really like is 90 minutes, even though we call it a Power Hour. No interruptions, and you just do it. Now, you could say, well, my boss won't let me do that, or my company won't let me do that. Sometimes the whole company won't take the policy, but what we've seen is a person anywhere in the organization could lead up and down and say to the people below them, hey, for this hour, I'm going to be focused. Every day it's going to be a practice time I have. To their boss above them, you're going to say, hey, you might just would you mind if for that hour I just really crank and get the most important things done without interruption to serve you better? And they tend to buy in. And even if they don't want to take the practice on, you do, and you show how much you get done just by having focus time, because most organizations, people don't focus for even, 10 minutes. So that's an idea. The email strategy, some of the other things are like that, but that help in the midst of that, and I can answer any specific question.
Sure.
But the Power Hour is just a time frame to stay absolutely focused with and not take calls, not take interruptions, so that you serve people better. Some people are so they think, oh, I got to take the interruption to serve people well. Not true. In fact, some people think open door policy is best. I want to have open heart policy to people, but I do not mind at all shutting the door and saying, for this time of focus, I won't take an interruption so that I can serve people well and get done what I actually need to get done for them.
Well, it brings us to stewardship, and I know we only have about 5 minutes left, so maybe this is a good time to talk about, what's at the heart of your work, you're sharing these business strategies with businesses and leaders all across the globe. Talk about the importance of the foundations, I guess, and maybe your personal foundation to be talking about the Daily Edge.
Well, I think certainly everybody that knows me knows my faith in Jesus Christ and the whole trust thing. There's go back to trust piece. Two major themes came out of the trust work. A lack of trust is the biggest expense in our organization, and there's a way to build it, 8-pillar framework. And interestingly, the Bible has two major themes about trust, too, I believe. One is trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your understanding, and all acknowledge Him. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and it'll make your paths straight. That Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, and over and over and over. David, I don't trust in chariots, don't trust in swords, trust in the name of the Lord my God. This whole thing of trusting God is first. Second side was, forgive me if you need to look it up at home, but Proverbs, I believe, 12:21 or 22, it says, the Lord delights in the trustworthy. And that's that eight-pillar framework that came out of really secular research, that this is, the Lord does delight in those that do good, that be in him and that do for him. So sometimes people, I think, skew the Mary and Martha story a little bit and just want to be, and there's truth in that. But there's also this thing that God, we are judged by our fruit, and he wants to use us to do great things. And this is where the daily edge comes in. These are some actionable ways we can love people by doing things that serve him and kingdom work. And I'll leave you briefly with one last strategy in there, and that's the seed strategy. S-E-E-D-S. This is one of the strategies in the book. But what we see is people go try to accomplish some big goal, and they get all inspired, they hear some speaker or whatever, and then they go home, and they just don't have the momentum. They lose momentum. They can't do it. And what we've learned, and this is a little bit inspired by my wife, too, so I give her credit, is that if people don't plant their seeds and cultivate their seeds first, they really can't accomplish any big goal. So check your seeds before you try to do this big thing. Seeds, what's it stand for? S, sleep. Turns out we need it. You need some sleep. People that sleep enough, they're more effective, more efficient. They actually have a better health, better weight. The first E is exercise. It's great to exercise. Everybody knows it, but you'll see some ideas in the book because I need you to find out something I would do. My wife ran a marathon last week. I'm not going to do that. So what are the things that I can do, will do, would enjoy doing? The next E is way more important than exercise, and that's eating right. Eating is way more important. You've got a tool you're using. It to be most efficient, your body, this body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. When you put the right stuff in, you get the right stuff out. Input leads to output in every area of life. So I learned if I make myself eat 4 to 6 green vegetables a day, I get better output. So make sure you know what you're putting in. The D stands for drink water. My dad used to say best drink least advertised, but we're made of water. We need water. If you can drink water, especially don't drink your calories, I think your body, it runs much more efficiently. The last S in the SEEDS acronym stands for source of strength. If you don't have a source of strength beyond yourself, it is hard to last at anything. Of course, for Lisa and I, that is our trust in God and our strength that we get from our faith in him. We have a certain amount of strength from family and friends, and I have an accountability group and all that. So there's a source of strength. I see so many business leaders, speakers, and others that they do their thing and they are lonely afterwards because they get everything they get from their audience or from their business. And I'm telling you, if you don't have a source of strength beyond yourself, it is hard to last. Think of legendary football coach Tom Landry. You know, after one of the games, a reporter on national television sticks the microphone in his face and says, "What is it with you, Landry? Coach Landry? Everybody, you know, the other coaches, when they win, they're happy. When they lose, they're upset. You're the same every time. How can you be just even every time?" And on national television, Tom Landry to the microphone says, "I don't know. I think it's because I have my priorities in order. For me, God comes first, family's next, friends are after that. If I lose on Sunday, I got a whole lot left over." If you only trust in yourself, you don't have much left over. But if you have a faith beyond yourself, you have a chance to have a source of strength beyond yourself. And for me, that's most important.
Seeds first. That's one of the tips found in the Daily Edge, simple strategies to increase efficiency and make an impact every day. And it's the new book from David Horsager. David's business strategist, keynote speaker, and author of the national bestseller, The Trust Edge. In fact, you can find The Daily Edge at any major bookstore or get it on Amazon. And there's a number of free resources you can find as well at TrustEdge.com. That's their website, TrustEdge.com. So check that out. And David, thank you for carving out a little time with us today and encouraging us with this great new book and wonderful strategies.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate you anytime.
You've been listening to Connecting Faith, and we'll post this interview with the links on our website. Go to myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page.